Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, welcome. Well, I want to begin today's show by asking you, if you would just dare to be yourself, what would you be doing? Where would you be? And maybe more importantly, who would you be? Today, I'm talking with two very different guests. They have two very different journeys and have two very different philosophies, although maybe not, because both of them have dared to be themselves, and that's what we're talking about today. Coming up at 12:30, Tim Tyler will share his passion for the edge. It culminated in a life-changing trip across Alaska and the Pacific Northwest. Critics call his award-winning work an adventure story that shows how business principles can be applied to successful living, how a road trip became a pathway to finding dreams, and a motorcycle, a metaphor for life. We'll find out more around 12:30 today. First, I'd like to welcome Alan Cohen. Dr. Wayne Dyer says this of my first guest. Alan Cohen is a major, major player in the spiritual revolution. He's one of my favorite authors. I love his work. It's a great contribution. And I want powerful, enlightened, conscious people to read and apply these messages. Alan Cohen is the author of 22 inspirational books and CDs, including the best-selling The Dragon Doesn't Live Here Anymore, the award-winning A Deep Breath of Life, and the classic Are You As Happy As Your Dog? Good question to ask. He is a contributing writer for the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, and his books have been translated into 23 foreign languages. His work has been featured on Oprah.com and in 101 Top Experts. Alan Cohen, welcome to the show.
Hi, Vicki. Very happy to be here. Thank you.
And I should also say you are the author of Dare to Be Yourself, How to Quit Being an Extra in Other People's Movies and Become the Star of Your Own Life. So I wanted to start, Alan, you have some great information in this book, some wonderful philosophies. And I wanted to start by sharing your journey with our listeners. You said that you... when you started along your pathway of enlightenment, of an awakening, you felt as though your whole world was falling apart. Many of the things that had been important to you suddenly seemed meaningless. You say you felt lost. You felt sometimes as though even you were going crazy. So tell us what happened. What started the awakening for you and how that process went?
I was in college, and I went away to what they called a human relations retreat, where about a dozen people went to a cabin in the woods and talked about our feelings and our lives. And suddenly I realized that I had been living in my head for most of my life. I'd been playing lots of games, and I was not in touch with my heart or my feelings or my truth. And being with a group of people who were dedicated to speaking from the depths of their being stirred me to want to live more authentically, and I realized I'd been wearing a mask and just disconnected from my spirit. And so I became hungry and voracious to learn who I really was and what my life was really about. And I went studying with lots of gurus and teachers and mystics, and little by little I peeled away the layers of illusion that kept me from being myself. And you know, it's a never-ending process. I'm just becoming more authentic daily.
It is a never-ending process, isn't it? I said to my mother a few weeks ago on a situation I was working on, when does it end? And she goes, it doesn't. It's life. So I want to talk about disillusionment. You say, you know, many people allow a disappointment or a disillusionment or a setback to stop them in their tracks and can live in that space for a very long period of time. Some never come out of it. You say, see this as a step toward truth, that something false has come undone. I wonder if you'd talk about disillusionment and the importance of letting that go.
Well, think of the word disillusionment. It means that an illusion has been undone, and what's left is the truth. So the best thing that can happen to you is to be disillusioned. Now, I understand that there's a disappointment in there, but on the other side of it is something wonderful. I had a client once who told me she had a rude awakening. I said, what was that? She said, well, I was working as a hospital technician and I injured my hand and I lost my job for a long time. And I said, well, that's the rude part. What was the awakening? She said, well, I spent time with my kids and I studied psychology and I didn't like that job anyway. And her whole life changed because she was kicked out of a situation that was not working for her. So really, every upset is a setup, or every setback is a setup, really. And you can never judge a momentary setback at face value because there's always something greater and more wonderful on the other side if you're willing to look for it and find it.
Yeah, and you talk about that in the book, about looking for the good in situations. Some people have a hard time doing that. Do you find that?
Well, yeah, just because we have habits of thought, we're trained to look at what's not working. But if you study the lives of successful and happy people, they have trained their minds to find values where other people are seeing deficits. So it's really just a matter of shifting your emphasis and reframing what's happening, because there's always something better than your mind will tell you.
Mm. We each have many turning points in life, Alan, and one turning point in particular that you'd like us to explore. You discuss this in the book, Dare to Be Yourself. You want us to explore an event in our lives that led us to start protecting ourselves, to shield ourselves from the pain, and then to examine if are we still holding that? Are we still dealing with situations? Are we still holding that pain? I wonder if you'd talk a little bit about that.
Well, pain is a wake-up call. And, if your heart is broken, let it be broken open. Mm. Unfortunately, a lot of people have a broken heart or a disease or a setback, and they wallow in it, and they develop a whole identity around their pain, which only keeps them in pain. So the only purpose of pain is to make a course correction. It's like when you're driving on a highway. Some highways have these little bumpity things on the side of them. They're called turtles. And if you fall asleep at the wheel or veer from the road, it goes bumpity, 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 bump, and it gets your attention to get back on the road. And that's all that pain is. And if you stay on the bumpity bump and say, oh my goodness, I'm a bumpity bump kind of person now, I have to stay bumpity bump, you will be a bumpity bump. But if you say, hey, wait a minute, this does not feel so good, and this is jarring, and this is surprising, and maybe there's another way I could drive that would be more peaceful, then the pain has served its purpose. So we want to use pain as a course correction, not a state of life.
Mm. And then many of us, if we decide what we do want, have a hard time in asking for it. You share a funny story in the book about, I think he was an author who said if he could change one thing in his life, he'd go back to the age of 17, where he'd be sitting in his high school locker room, and there the fridge, a 300-pound football player, would go up to him, lift him up by the collar and shove him against the locker and say, either tell me exactly what you want in your life or I'll bite your head off. And he wished he'd learned that a long time ago.
Yeah. Well, life is kind of doing that to us anyway, because if you don't ask for what you really want, life will get in your face and force you to do it. And I work with lots of people who've been through divorces, and many of them report that there were issues in their marriage that were kind of brewing and bubbling for a long time that they never dealt with, and then one day they just blew up in their face, and they realized retrospectively that if they have told the truth and shared their real feelings and asked what they really wanted a long time ago, they would have either gotten it or moved on to something else without waiting for their marriage to blow up. So it's really very, very vital that each of us look into our hearts, see what we really want, and have the courage to ask for it. Now, you don't always get it immediately, but you usually get it eventually or better. And so I always encourage people, ask for 100% of what you want 100% of the time, and you will be amazed at how much life will actually yield when you do.
Yeah, and the same is true of defining ourselves. You say if we don't ask for what we want, we'll get what we're given. And the same is true for defining ourselves. If we don't define ourselves, other people do and will, won't they?
Sure. Someone said if you don't use your mind, someone else will. And so if you sit and watch TV all day or just read the newspapers or gossip or talk about the economy, you will be shaped according to the way the media would create you, which is not in a very happy position. So each of us has to have the courage and integrity to stand on who we are, regardless of who or what other people would have us be, and then we become a master of our own lives.
Sounds good to me. Let's take a quick break. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest is Alan Cohen. His book, Dare to Be Yourself, How to Quit Being an Extra in Other People's Movies and Become the Star of Your Own.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
If you like to read fiction, check out Book Talk Podcast Reviews, brought to you weekly by Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Go to conversationslive.net and click on the menu at Book Talk to hear reviews of an eclectic range of books. We review fiction from chick lit and mystery to suspense and literary, from new to old, overlooked and forgotten. Check out Book Talk Podcast today at conversationslive.net. If you'd like to suggest a book for review, email info@conversationslive.net or call 206-414-6159.
Hi, this is Julie Forbes. Join me on Wednesday afternoons from 2 to 3 p.m. for the Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. Listen to discussions on dog-related topics and call in to voice your opinion or ask my opinion about your dog. We will talk about everything from dog behavior to pet food to dog training programs in prisons. The Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. I'm your host, Julie Forbes. Tune in Wednesdays from 2 to 3 p.m. on Alternative Talk 1150.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Talk radio to brighten your day.
Get a grip on life with Alternative Talk 1150.
And welcome back. We're talking in this segment with Alan Cohen, author of Dare to Be Yourself, author of more than 22 books and CDs. And I wanted to talk about this, Alan. You mention in the book, you talk about a great sage named Sri Ramana, who said that when you know who you are, you will have the answer to every challenge that life poses. When you do not remember who you are, all of life is a problem. It sounds great. Is it really that simple?
Oh, yes, it's totally simple, but it just takes practice because we've learned to make our minds complex. And so one wonderful method for awakening is when you're feeling bad and someone has criticized you, ask yourself, who is it that feels hurt? And you will realize that who you really are is bigger than the one who feels hurt. And even though the hurt may be there on one level, you as a spiritual being are greater than your current hurt. So really, everything is an exercise in discovering who we really are.
Mm. You use yourself in the book. You give some examples in the book of your awakening. And one of the stories I liked a lot, because I think many people put blocks in their own way. I think there's a huge thing to be said for naivete sometimes, and this story illustrates it perfectly. You use the phrase, "Don't walk out of the store." You'd already published several books, and you walked into a bookstore and suddenly saw all these books out there writing about similar kind of things to you were writing. You said if you'd known that in the beginning, it probably would have stopped you writing.
Right. Yeah, you know, when I wrote my first book, I just did it for fun, and I wasn't trying to be rich or famous. I just wanted to express myself in my own unique voice, and I did. And the book became quite successful. And then I went to the bookstore and saw all these authors who had written books on similar subjects. And I thought, my God, I would have been really intimidated if I walked in beforehand. But then what I realized was that there's really nothing new that anybody's saying. Everybody's just taking angles on truth, which is the same.
Right.
And I realized that each of us has our own unique voice. And it's kind of interesting because on the bookshelf, I'm usually between Chopra and Dyer, both people I respect. And I realized that we're all saying the same thing, but each of us has our own perspective. And that's what makes it interesting to people. There's an audience out there for each of our perspectives. So if you're a musician or a writer or a teacher or an artist, do not compare yourself with others because there is a market for your unique voice and style, and those people, by the law of attraction, will find you. And that's the miracle and the beauty of how this whole thing works.
You talk a lot about being original. You have a whole chapter on daring to be original. And another thing you talk about in that chapter is that somebody once told you you're like the first one on the dance floor. Tell us what they meant by that.
Well, I do things in my own way, and I'm not perfect, and I'm not slick, but I'm me. And someone once said, you know, I took a course in public speaking, and when I listened to you, you violated 8 out of 10 of the rules of public speaking. He said, but you're my favorite speaker because you're real. And I guess that was a compliment, but I took it as fun. What he was saying, I believe, was that when someone is genuine, even if they're not perfect in form, that realness and sincerity oozes through, and the audience catches that, and that's the thing that grabs people by the soul. It's not the words or the looks. It's really, you know, the essence of the message. So if each of us can tap into our own realness, then we really have a tool to work with.
And that's what this is all about, isn't it? Daring to be yourself. I think in these times, in these economic times with job situations the way they are and businesses the way they are, I think it's more important than ever that we define who we are for ourselves and dare to be ourselves. Don't you agree?
Well, absolutely, because there's this mass thought of lack and loss and victimization here. And in some of my workshops recently, I've been asking, how many of you are thriving or know people who are thriving during these economic times? And a lot of them raise their hands, far more than probably if you just took a cross-section of the population. And I believe because when people trust their lives and they trust themselves and they trust the universe, they do things that they would not do if they were afraid because of hard economic times. And so this is the best time for originality and uniqueness because people who come from their own spirit, if you will, shine and succeed far more than people who are sitting home worrying and waiting for the economy to change.
I would agree. And I think in the workplace, it's not the time to try and fly under the radar. You need to be different. You need to separate yourself from the pack in a positive way. You believe the key element in success, however we define success, is belief in oneself. And you say that you had an attitude that was hurting you at one point in Dare to Be Enough. I think it's a very common belief, very disempowering, but many of us say we believe in ourselves, but there's this little niggling voice second-guessing us all the time.
Right.
How did you overcome that with yourself?
Well, I gave workshops for a while, and I used to get nervous. I still do, but in the beginning, I used to get nervous because what if I flop? And then one day I was driving to a workshop and I was getting nervous and his voice said, you know, you always get nervous and it always works anyway, so what's the use of getting nervous here? And so, and then later I read a study where they interviewed the top Hollywood studio executives and they asked them, what's your biggest fear? And they answered, I'm afraid that people find that I don't really know what I'm doing. And the joke was, that they really did know what they were doing, and they were hugely successful in helping lots of people, but it was just that little voice that said you're a phony and you're a fraud, and if people really knew who you were, they wouldn't love you. And that's the voice that all of us need to confront, because that's the liar. See, part of us believes that we are the liar, and if we were exposed, we'd be crucified. But the truth is that the voice that tells you you are a phony, that's the liar, and that's the one that needs to be exposed and crucified.
Yeah. And I think if we do run into situations where we genuinely don't know, it's perfectly okay. I mean, the best thing to do is fess up and say, you know what, I don't know, but we'll figure it out.
Sure.
You say dare to take back our power. This is another important one. I wonder if you'd talk a little bit about, you know, the way that ways that we give away our power and how we can identify where we're giving it away and how we can take it back.
Well, that's a great question. We give our power away whenever you believe that someone else is better or someone is closer to what you want than you are. In other words, we do it with celebrities very often. We do it with wealthy people, with very attractive people, sometimes with authority figures like landlords or judges or people who we believe in some way have more control over our lives than we do. And that's just never, never true. No one has power over you unless you give it to them. And so it's kind of a fun exercise. I used to have a landlord that I would get nervous around, and my girlfriend at the time said, "You know, Alan, you're a pretty powerful guy, but when you talk to Mario, you become like an like a 12-year-old." And I realized that she was right, and he was my best learning partner because I got to practice holding my power in his presence, and over time I did. So anytime you feel little or less than or victimized by somebody, it's a sure sign you've given your power away, and they're your best learning partner to help you take it back.
Mm. And if we find ourselves talking about a situation with a particular person, that's another sure sign that we're giving away our power there too, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. You talk about turning scars into stars. I love that phrase because we do go through difficulties in life. Everybody does. And I do believe we are left with some kind of emotional scar on some level for some situations. How do we turn those scars into stars?
Well, there's a whole art called reframing, which means that you take that which seemed to be a negative, and on one level it might have been, and you turn it into a positive by looking for the benefits. And Gallup actually did a survey, and they asked people what was the worst thing that happened to you. And then they asked them what was the best thing that happened to you. And they found an 80% correlation between the worst and the best. In other words, four out of five people decided that that divorce or that physical challenge or that job setback, even though at the moment it messed with their head, when they figured out the big picture and moved beyond it, they were empowered by it. And that's what an immunization does. It gives you a little bit of a dose of the disease that you're worried about, and your body learns how to fight it. So if the bigger disease comes along, you're now immunized against it. So in that sense, everything that happens to us ultimately is in our benefit if we know how to look at it from the proper angle.
Mm. Let's just quickly look at jealousy and envy, because we can't be ourselves if we're feeling jealous or envious, and we can't be ourselves around other people who project jealousy or envy towards us. What do you have to say on jealousy and envy?
Well, envy means that you're counting somebody else's blessings rather than your own. And envy means that you believe that somebody has something that you want and you can't have it, which is kind of a half-truth. Yes, they found it, but them having it doesn't mean that you can't have it. So the way to turn envy around is to say, hey, that person has it, so can I, and use them as an inspiration, as a model to have what you want rather than begrudging them having it. So really, like all negative feelings, envy is an opportunity to shift and pivot and move in a new direction.
Yeah, I think a lot of that comes from what I call the scarcity mentality, feeling there's not enough to go around and there's plenty to go around. There's plenty to go around.
Yeah.
Tell us what one thing that you wish you'd known 20 years ago. You know now and you wish you'd known 20 years ago. What's the biggest thing that would have made a difference back then for you?
Well, looking back on my life, I see that nothing has undermined me more than self-doubt. And I see that there were social opportunities and relationship opportunities and business opportunities that I could have capitalized on if I believed in myself more. And so if I had it to do all over again, it's always easy to say that, isn't it?
It
you know,
is.
But
it's good to recognize it.
What's that?
It's good to recognize it, though.
Yeah, I mean, I'm tongue-in-cheek because it's all for learning. But I think that if I just, you know, had more confidence in my intuitions and my passions and my inspirations, then I think I would have parlayed some opportunities into bigger opportunities, into bigger results earlier rather than later.
Mm. So erase that self-doubt. Well, I want to, before we go today, I want to just talk a little bit about your latest book, because you're going on a new venture. I think this is your first fiction book. Am I correct?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. You've written 22 books and CDs, nonfiction books and CDs, but this is your first fiction book. So tell us a little bit about this and why you decided to branch into fiction.
People have been telling me for many years that they enjoy my storytelling, and as you read through my books, there are many, many small stories. And I thought, wouldn't it be wonderful to take a big picture principle like the value of life and the value of our power over our destiny and weave it into an intriguing, entertaining adventure story about someone who has to figure out who he is and what he's here for. So I wrote a book called Lyndon's Last Life. It's about a guy who's about to jump off a bridge when a monk finds him and tells him that if you do it like this, if you run away like this, you're going to have to come back and it's going to be a lot worse. And so this man goes about the business of taking charge of his life so he doesn't have to run away from it. And it's a love story. It's a metaphysical story. It really asks and answers the question, is life worth living and do we have control over our destiny? And so it's kind of a metaphysical teaching and a very palatable and enjoyable story.
Sounds interesting. Sounds as though many of our listeners would enjoy that. So ping me when it comes out. I think it's coming out in October. Is that correct?
Right, October 15th.
Yeah. So, please do remind us and we'll let our listeners know. And I want to thank you for being with us today, Alan Cohen. Enjoyed talking with you. And people can reach you at alancohen.com, A-L-A-N.
Correct.
C-O-H-E-N.com, alancohen.com. Thanks so much for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you, Vicki.
And Alan's book again, the one we talked about today, was Dare to Be Yourself, How to Quit Being an Extra in Other People's Movies and Become the Star of Your Own. And coming up next, we'll be joined by Tim Tyler, who went on a life-changing trip across Alaska. Please stay with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Hi, I'm Andrea Kay, America's leading career expert. I know it's going to be a great conversation when Vicki St. Clair asked me to offer my career advice on her show. Vicki asks thoughtful questions, she's thorough, she works hard to bring you great guests who walk their talk with information and solutions that can lift your career and better your life so that you'll live well, live strong. My advice? Tune into our conversations and all the interviews on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair for thought-provoking insight and tips on the things that really matter in your life. And visit AndreaKay.com, that's Andrea, K-A-Y.com, for information about my books and loads of free practical advice and inspiration for your career.
Do you have legal questions? Need to know where to turn?
Hi, this is Rick Gregrick, your host of Northwest Legal Compass.
Northwest Legal Compass will address your questions on a variety of legal topics, including estate planning, asset protection, real estate and business planning, and more. The legal and accounting staff of Gregrick and Associates are dedicated to providing you with superior legal and tax services. Their integrated counsel is geared to the achievement of your goals.
Visit us on the web at rjglegal.com.
Be sure and tune in every Friday at noon here on Alternative Talk 1150. Coming July 27th on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, we'll discuss good food beyond factory farming with one of America's leading environmental activists, Nicolette Ham Neiman. She'll share how to make sure your food is untainted and how to buy from producers who raise animals in a cruelty-free, sustainable manner. And later, vegetarian or vegan, we'll talk with top whole food chef Mark Reinfeld to review some healthy tips and tasty quick fix recipes. Join us Monday, July 27th at noon. See conversationslive.net for more information.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to help you heal and stay healthy.
Get your smile on with Alternative Talk 1150.
And welcome back. Welcome back. We're talking today about daring to be yourself. My first guest was Alan Cohen. And now we're joined by Tim Tyler. Let me tell you a little bit about Tim, and then I'm going to let him share his journey in his own words. He's had quite an adventure on more levels than one. Tim Tyler holds 5 patents, started 2 businesses. He managed the development of some of the largest oil fields in North America for British Petroleum. He conducted research and development for Texaco, headed a worldwide research and technical service organization in England, and has traveled around the world. Well, that was just the beginning for Tim Tyler. He now lives his dreams while helping others do the same. And I'm going to bring him on and let him share the rest of the story. Tim Tyler, welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm excited to be here, Vicky.
Yeah, pleased to have you here. You are actually a Washingtonian by birth. You grew up in Walla Walla, small...
Yes, that's correct.
Mm-hmm. And you served 4 years in the U.S. Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
Went on to study chemical engineering.
Yes, that's right.
And you actually retired by the age of 50.
Correct.
Yeah. So tell us what life was like for you before you decided to go on this trip and why you went on this trip.
Okay, well, from an early age, I wanted to explore the possibilities of succeeding in my passions, and I started reading books about how to succeed, and I have a large library on these books, and each book I had a list of things in it to do. It might be 3 things, it might be 7, 12. One book actually had over 100 different things that you needed to do in order to be successful. And I was trying to apply these principles, the things that I learned in the books, and I would find that even after trying for months, they ended up not really having an impact on my life. And so it was interesting. This motorcycle trip that I took through Alaska and Canada and the Pacific Northwest was one of the dreams, and I was living it. And as I was living this dream, I finally discovered why it was that these other success books weren't impacting my life.
And so let's just go step back a minute, because okay. you were working in a corporate environment.
Yes, I was.
You decided to go on this trip.
Yes.
You told your wife, and she was very supportive, correct?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So why the motorcycle? I know that's become a metaphor for life in the book, but why did you choose to go by motorcycle, first of all?
Well, I had bought a motorcycle, and my wife supported me in doing this, and she was thinking about buying a trip to allow me to do this. Well, my brother called me up one time, and he lives in the Seattle area. At the time, he lived in Issaquah, and we started talking. We decided, well, let's do this trip. And so it kind of turned into it was just an adventure that we decided to have on our motorcycles together.
Mm. So along the way, you started, you just went pretty much with an open mind.
Yes.
This is what I gather from reading the book and the material. You had a totally open mind. You go on this trip, you're not knowing what to expect. Or did you actually have a route mapped out?
I did have a route, yes.
Mm-hmm. And so along the way, you start realizing that the trip is unfolding as a metaphor for life, basically.
Yes.
And all these self-help books you'd read before were just hadn't really helped you that much.
That's correct, yes.
Yeah. So tell us, what was one of the biggest challenges for you?
You mean during the trip?
Yeah, during the trip.
Well, I mentioned that my brother and I were going to go on this together, and at the last minute he had to pull out because of some conflicts with some jobs. And so kind of moving from we're going to do a trip together to a solo trip where I'm going to be out in the wilderness by myself, there's a lot of potential for danger, accidents, encounters with wild animals, and that sort of thing. So kind of transitioning from doing something together with somebody else to doing a solo ride was kind of challenging for me at the time.
Right. And I know people were more than willing to share all their worries with you.
Yes.
because
Absolutely. The
first couple of days, those on your trip, those were going through your mind, you know, be careful of the roads, watch out for grizzly bears.
Yes.
So how did you, and you started out in the pouring rain as well, which wasn't maybe, you know, didn't seem a great way to start a trip for you.
Yeah, that's right.
So you wrote this book when you came back from the trip.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you write the book?
Well, the main reason is currently the economy is kind of in a very rocky spot, and I hear a lot of my friends and family talking about putting off their dreams, putting off retirement, putting off starting a job, putting off traveling. And also when I go to book signings, there's people that come up to me and say things like, oh, I've always wanted to write a book. So I've met a lot of people that either have dreams that they can't seem to get started on, or they have dreams and they meet an obstacle in their pathway that it looks like it's preventing them from living their dreams.
Mm.
And so what I wanted to do is, like you said, I use this motorcycle trip as a metaphor for life success journey. And I wanted to use this to show that dreams can be lived, and the obstacles that you face during them can be overcome. And I give several examples on how to overcome obstacles, how to face fears and that sort of thing in the book.
Mm. I think one of the most important things you really talk about, this is what I get from your book, from your work, Tim, is that many of us put our own obstacles in our way. Many of us think, I'll do this when, or I have to have a certain amount of money, I have to look a certain way, I have to be a certain way, I have to have a certain amount of schooling, whatever, before we proceed with our dream. And the whole concept of your work is, no, you don't have to have everything in place. You start doing it, living it today. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. Obstacles, for example, people sometimes say, I don't have enough money to do what I want to do as an obstacle. Well, an obstacle is just an imaginary thing that's preventing you from doing what you want to do. If you actually look specifically at the obstacle that you think is preventing it and see if you can find a way around that obstacle, see if you can find a way to get the money that you need to live your dreams, almost without a doubt, you'll find a way. And if you find a way around the obstacle, then the obstacle doesn't exist. I was intrigued in an earlier show that you did with Mommy Millionaire, and she said that she needed $20,000 to get her business together. And she wasn't sure where she would get it, and so she went out and just used her credit card.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was one way to get through that obstacle.
Yeah.
Another interesting story on money not being an obstacle is Tom Scott and Tom First. They wanted to start up a business. They were able to put together $100, buy a juice or buy some fruit, buy some bottles, and start making fruit drinks. And that was the beginning of a business called Nantucket Nectar.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I think those guys were actually got in their little boats and started selling to people around Cape Cod. Is that
exactly?
Those,
yeah.
Yeah, they just had $100. They made this juice that they thought was fantastic. They're just kids, and they just hopped in their little boat and zipped around Cape Cod selling to thirsty boaters.
That's right.
And it's now worth millions.
Yeah, in 10 years they went from a little juice stand to being distributed in 30 states, 5 countries, and having hundreds of employees and being worth millions of dollars.
Mm.
So it is possible. The key is you need to have passion. You need to have a clear vision. It's not that there was anything unique about what they were doing. I mean, you can buy all kinds of bottled drinks in stores everywhere. It's just the difference was they had a passion, they had a vision, and they wanted to create something slightly unique.
Yeah, and how many people were out there selling to thirsty boaters as well? You know, that was a unique niche there. So I said at the beginning of the show that your trip changed your life in more ways than one. I mean, you learned a lot along the way, but you also quit your job when you came back.
Yes, I did.
Tell us about that.
Well, I became so passionate about how important it is to live your dreams. You see, it doesn't really matter what road you're going down. There is no such thing as security. If you're going down a road that's that's safe and you feel might be secure versus a road that leads to your dreams that you feel might be full of insecurity. What actually happens is both roads have the same difficulties. They both have highs, they have lows, they have obstacles you come into, they have discouragement. And so why would you choose a road other than a road that leads to your dreams? You're going to encounter the same issues, the same problems, the same challenges, the same ups and downs and highs and lows. So if you where you want to end up is your dream, then that's the road you should go down. And so I decided to do that.
Mm. Well, good for you. And we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I want to ask you how that changed your life and what you're doing now.
Okay.
We're talking to Tim Tyler. His book is called A Passion for the Edge, Living Your Dreams Now. And you're listening to Conversations Live. We'll be right back.
Do something different with your spare time. Give baby animals at Paws a fresh start. With the assistance of caring volunteers, Paws helps hundreds of orphaned and sick kittens and puppies each year. Join us and save lives. Become a Paws foster care volunteer. For more information, visit paws.org or 425-787-2500. Paws.org or 425-787-2500.
If you missed a show on Conversations Live, check out conversationslive.net for dozens of free podcasts. Topics range from health and healing to business and career growth, from personal development to creativity, adventure, and the challenges of the human spirit. See conversationslive.net for talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Conversationslive.net, making a difference one word at a time.
Conscious Living for Conscious People. Alternative Talk 1150.
Welcome back. There we go again. That great old motorcycle music Eric dug out for us there. We're talking in this segment with Tim Tyler. I can't get my words out today. A Passion for the Edge is his book, Living Your Dreams Now. And he wrote this after going on a 6,500-mile motorcycle trip. So, Tim, you come home from your trip, and what are you feeling? A lot of things, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm wondering if I'm going to end up one of those people who is 85 years and sitting around saying, all my life I wanted to do this. And I decided I didn't want to be one of those people.
Right.
So what I did is, what I really wanted to do is I wanted to write books. I wanted to spend more time in the area of investing. I wanted to spend more time with my family, who was nearly grown. Our last daughter was at home, and she's about ready to go off and leave. And I wanted to spend time in our community to help improve the community that we live in. Mm. And so I decided, I'm just going to do that. I'm going to follow my dreams.
Well, good. And you actually took the trip in, when did you take the trip? 1999, was it?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. And so you've been doing this ever since? You've been living your dream ever since?
That's right.
And I'm guessing, just on the little I know about you, that you have more dreams to fulfill yet.
Absolutely, yes.
Well, tell us about a couple of those.
Well, what I'd like to do is use the revenues that I can generate from selling this book to develop a curriculum for the school system to introduce in, like, the senior year of high school.
Mm.
And when I was overseas, I developed a course that uses these principles to help business people do amazing things, and that was the objective. And I started out giving it to a few people, and it was so successful that I had managers and supervisors from other departments coming to me and saying, I want my people to go through this course. I want my best people to take this. And it was really amazing to see this. And these are people in the 35 to maybe 55-year-old year range. And I was thinking, wouldn't this be amazing if we could take our kids that are just starting out in life and kind of a high school or pre-college age, and get them fired up, help them to understand that while the facts and figures and information that they're learning at school is good and valuable, in life, to be successful, you need more than just that. You need to have passion. You need to have dreams. You need to have the ability to see how to get around obstacles that you're faced with in life, because you're going to meet many challenges, many obstacles. So wouldn't that be great to get this in the school system and get these kids fired up at this early age and see what they can do with their lives?
It would be a gift.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah.
And so that's my dream now is seeing if I can develop a curriculum to introduce into the school system.
Mm, excellent. Well, you just were talking about obstacles, and I know that one of the life lessons you learned on your motorcycle, this was a 700-pound motorcycle. This was,
yes.
This was not a wimpy bike by any means. But you learned very quickly that in order to get to where you wanted to go, you had to concentrate on the path ahead instead of concentrating on the danger in front of you. Talk a little bit about overcoming obstacles, if you would.
It's important to focus on the future. For example, if you're riding your motorcycle and you come around a curve and up ahead you see an obstacle in the road, and if you focus on that obstacle while you're riding a motorcycle, you hit it. And that's just a fact.
Right.
Anybody who rides a motorcycle will tell you that. And the reason is because all your thoughts, all your muscles, all your reactions that you have are directed towards guiding the motorcycle towards the place that you're focused on. And it becomes automatic. It becomes something that you aren't thinking about. It's like blinking when somebody throws something at your face. You can't control it. It's automatic. So if you're focused on that obstacle in the road, you're going to hit it. By the same way, though, if you're focused on a safe path past the obstacle, you'll go past it and be okay. And that's the same thing with life. If you go where you're focused, and so if you're focused on something, that's where you're going to end up. And a kind of a corollary to that is, you are where you are today because of all your decisions and all your actions you've taken in the past. You've made the decision to be where you are today, and you have the ability to make the decision where you're going to be in the future by focusing on that, your objective.
Right, right. I unfortunately learned the focus on the road ahead instead of the obstacle in front of you when I was snowmobiling and a tree suddenly jumped out in front of me.
and you were focused on the tree
did you? No, I suddenly realized, you know, what my dad used to tell me when I was playing sports. Focus on, you know, the hit, not hitting the tree, but, you know, where you want to go. Where you want the ball to go. So you used to believe there were three sequential steps that were necessary to fulfill a dream. Tell us what these three steps are and why you no longer believe in them.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I've read a lot of books, and these books have lots of steps associated with them. If you boil down these steps, these lists of steps, it comes down to three things. The first one is educate yourself. The second one is develop new habits, and these are things like communication skills, improving your vocabulary, building relationships, getting organized, striving for excellence, that sort of thing. And then once you do all this stuff, you can start moving down. The third step would be moving towards your dreams. Well, when you look at that, it doesn't really seem to make sense because it didn't for me. I'd be doing all this stuff, and I'd look back a couple months later, and I really hadn't come any closer to my dreams. And the reason is it's kind of like treading water. You're sitting there, you're doing all these things, you're being busy, but it doesn't have anything to do with your dreams. It's not that these things are bad, getting organized, you know, improving your communication skills, building relationships. These are good things, but they aren't being directed at anything. And so what I'm saying is there's really no preparation work because you don't know where the skills and the things that you need to do once you get going down the road towards your dreams. So the best thing to do, just step onto that road, and if you meet a challenge on the way, address the challenge. Learn the skills as you're going, but always progress towards your dream.
Mm. I there's a saying I love. I've said it before and I'll say it again. It's sometimes you have to jump off cliffs and build your wings on the way down.
Exactly.
Sometimes that's the best way to learn. I loved in the book where you said that during the course of the 6,500-mile trip, you certainly learned the limitations of your bike. You learned it could go a certain speed. You learned it could go around corners and tip to a certain angle. But you never found your own limitations. How exciting is that?
Yeah. And, you know, I'm wondering, I think that oftentimes we set limitations that don't really exist. We think things aren't possible that really are possible for us. There's an interesting story about a broad jumper that used to set his hat on the ground, and then so he knew exactly how far he had to jump because he knew he could jump that far. And one time he set his hat on the ground at his target, and somebody moved it a foot, and he jumped, and he hit the target, and he broke a world's record. He'd never jumped that far before. And I thought that was wonderful. Example of our sometimes we are limiting ourselves as opposed to pushing the boundaries and saying, yeah, we can do this.
Mm. Now, your book has won many independent book awards. You won the Best Books Award finalist, highlighted title for independentpublishers.com. You'd never written a book before. You'd never self-published a book before. How did that make you feel to get these awards?
Oh, it was wonderful. I mean, of course, it's reassuring that somebody else appreciates the thing that you've worked on, but again, my main objective, I wanted to write a book because it captures the principles that will help people live their dreams, as well as it shows you how to get past obstacles and fears that you might think are limiting your ability to succeed in accomplishing your dream.
Mm.
And that's my main objective. I just want to help people. I want to use this as a foundation for something larger, like I said, perhaps introducing something into the education system that can benefit people in even a greater way.
Right, right. Now, I have to ask you, before you went on your trip, did you read Robert Persig's book, Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance?
Many years before I went on the trip, yes.
Yeah, I had to do that in a philosophy class, and my professor was so in love with that book.
Yeah, that was an amazing book.
So you come back. What do you think is the biggest thing that you've learned about yourself during that trip, during the past few years of your exploration?
Well, just that you can't tell yourself that something is impossible or you can't do it because you don't know that until you really try. If you look historically at some of the greatest minds in the world and what they've said is impossible from today's perspective, they look ridiculous. For example, the greatest minds of the time once said the earth was flat, and if you sailed too far, you'd fall off the edge.
Oh, right.
That it's impossible to fly, or just a little over 40 years ago, people were saying you can't put a man on the moon in a decade. It would take over 100 years. And these are the greatest minds of our time. And we look back at these things that people have told us are impossible, and today they seem laughable. And it's the same way. I don't think that it's possible to really find the limits unless you strive for something that you think is impossible.
Right. And that old saying, once we've challenged ourselves to new heights, we can never go back.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, I thank you for being with us today, Tim, and sharing your experiences with us. The book is called A Passion for the Edge, Living Your Dreams Now. Where can people reach you if they want to take a better look at the book?
Well, you can either go to my website at passionfortheedge.com, and I have some excerpts from the book and some of the photographs from the journey and things like that, which is a lot of fun. You can also get it at Amazon.com or any bookstore. You can order it at any bookstore.
Great. Thank you so much for being with us today, Tim Tyler.
Thank you for having me. You have a great day.
You too. And I want to thank everyone for joining us today. I do appreciate you being with us every Monday at noon. If you have questions or comments on today's show or suggestions for future guests or show topics, you can reach me at 800-495-7617, 800-495-7617. Or if you want to just leave a simple message, you can do that at our special listener voicemail, 206-414-6159. That's 206-414-6159. And check out our website at conversationslive.net. We'll be back next week to talk about good food beyond factory farming. Until then, live well, live strong. Thanks for being with us today.
Coming July 27th on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, we'll discuss good food beyond factory farming with one of America's leading environmental activists, Nicolette Hamm-Niemann. She'll share how to make sure your food is untainted and how to buy from producers who raise animals in a cruelty-free, sustainable manner. And later, vegetarian or vegan, we'll talk with top whole food chef Mark Reinfeld to review some healthy tips and tasty quick-fix recipes. Join us Monday, July 27th at noon. See conversationslive.net for more information.